Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back. Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast number 27. It is your lovely, friendly host, Mario O'Brien. What's going on?
What's up, world?
How you doing? So, yeah, please hit us up, skibumpodcast.com. Check us out on iTunes. You can check us out on Facebook as well, /skibumpodcast. On Twitter, @skibumpodcast. Send us an email at skibumpodcast@gmail.com.
So what are we talking about today, Brian?
Today, we are talking about just bringing it. Our main topic is going to be kind of, you know, still early. You know, the season hasn't started yet. But now is the time to start thinking about all the gear you're going to need so that when that snow, that fresh dump happens, you got everything you need. You can throw it in the car, get up to the mountain, and you're good to go.
So it's like the prep before the prep, knowing what you want to get so that you can buy stuff and things like that, right?
You nailed it.
Boom. So, yeah, be a fun topic today. But first, we got a little,
little of that music. A little weekly flavor.
So we got a little fun weekly flavor today. We actually had a fun time getting the weekly flavor.
Yeah, today was quite an adventure, wasn't it, for us? We had like the quintessential ski bum afternoon.
It was pretty cool. Like
this week.
It started out just getting together for the podcast. And they were like, well, maybe we'll grab some beers, maybe we'll grab something to eat, and then, you know, kind of talk about the stuff that we were going to go over. And then it went into stopping at the ski shop, dropping off skis, talking to our buddy, Derek.
Yes. A shout out to Derek and High Nose. They are absolutely fantastic. Everything they do, they love what they do. They are all about skiing. Derek gave us a little bit of a tour, showed us, you know, where they do all the all the maintenance, all the prep for the skis, and showed us just the whole place and was talking to us for probably a good hour and a half.
I thought we were going to just stop in, drop off my skis, say hi, chat a little, and you know what? It was really fun.
Yeah, it was great. We talked to him. We talked to Greg, who's like the master boot fitter, and a few other folks there, and they just they have an awesome shop. They're a lot of fun to talk to. So if you're in the North Jersey area, reach out to them, High Nose.
Some of the best boot fitters in at least the nation, if not the planet.
Yeah, they were talking, you know, Derek was telling us some pretty cool stories about people, you know, racers going to, you know, college in Maine, coming down just to get their boots fitted and then heading right back up. People flying from all over the world doing business in New York City, taking
Japan,
a trip out.
Isle of Man.
Singapore, like people Singapore. Traveling. They're in New York City where, you know, they can go to Surefoot, but they're taking the 45-minute hour trek to High Nose to get their boots fitted there. Yeah. That's really cool. That's legit. He's even saying that people, you know, the climbers, they're getting inserts for their climbing boots. People going to Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Going there to get their boots fitted.
It's pretty awesome.
That's so cool, yeah.
Not only that, you talk to Derek and you talk to the other people there, and they're connected with the place around them. They're connected with the industry. Like, they know everything that's going on. And they've been doing it for so long. Like, they even know all the other people from the ski shops. And he's even worked at all the other ski shops. They stop in, they say hi to people. It's really cool. Like, they go skiing with them and stuff.
It shows what a really cool, tight-knit community the skiing is, even in a place like North Jersey, you know? And he gave us some really cool insights, too, about, you know, was it Hidden Valley?
Yeah.
How they're doing they put a ton of work into it, and it's going to be a premier ski racing resort.
It's going to be a training center.
Not even a resort, yeah. A training center. Yeah, exactly.
Which is going to be phenomenal.
That's fantastic. I said, Ted Ligety is on the board,
yep.
And he's involved in the decision-making there. So this is going to be legit what they're doing there.
And he even said, I guess he finds out all the inside info. Like, so they announced the Meadowlands is going to have a ski run. They built it, but they'd never opened it. So 2017, they were going to open it. And he's hoping, too, like the training center is going to be bidding on that contract to open up a training center right there, like 15 minutes outside of Manhattan.
Yeah, he said too. Crazy. It would be very similar to like when you're, and if any of you guys play hockey or ice skate, you can rent out hockey rinks usually for, you know, 2 hours at midnight, 2 a.m, 4 a.m, which I've done, and it's such a blast. But they're going to be doing that too for training on this ski
That's
mountain,
crazy.
This indoor ski mountain. So, yeah.
And then the opportunities for like marketing events and things like that would be phenomenal, especially in this area.
A lot of stuff going on in the North Jersey area, I got to tell you. And it was great getting his insights and talking to him. So, we're going to hopefully get Derek on the podcast one of these days and just keep popping in and talking to them because they do an awesome job there.
Last 2 days for their ski sale, too. Better
yes,
run in.
Get there. Hurry. Actually, by the time this podcast goes out tomorrow, Saturday, you will have only a matter of hours. So
one more day. Yeah.
One more day. Make it happen. You won't miss out. So, long story short, after we talked to Derek, we went on another run. And
let's go get some beer. Let's go to a beer shop. Let's go to, you know.
So we were originally going to the place that was local to us that we've gone to plenty of times, which is fine. But then we got heads up from a friend of ours, John, and who will be on the podcast eventually too. And he told us to go to this place up in wherever, you know, Hamburg. What is it? Hamburg Turnpike.
Up by Preakness and Wayne.
By Preakness and Wayne. And we're like, oh, where is this place? We look at it. I'm like, this place is tiny. What's going on here? We go inside. This place is a goddamn treasure trove.
But it wasn't alcohol. A small place. It was deceiving because they actually took up the store next to them. So you go in, it's pretty decent size, and it's packed with tons
very
of
deceiving.
Liquor.
It's very deep. Yes. Yeah, it went way back. And I mean, beer, liquor, wine. I mean, their selection was amazing. But they're known for their beer selection. Yeah. And big shout out to Kevin, who we chatted with for probably a good 45 minutes.
They have a tasting bar there, which was amazing.
Bar.
I've never seen Friday
afternoon tasting bar, yeah.
Yep.
So we got to sample a couple of great beers. And this is why we brought this up, because the beers that we're drinking now were ones that we were recommended by Kevin there.
Yeah.
So, Mario, what do you have right now?
So I have the Yards Cape of Good Hope. It's an unfiltered double dry hop aged. And Yards, I didn't realize, is a 100% wind powered brewery. So
that's a beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing. But I tell you what, this is the...
They're out of Philly, right?
They're out of Yards. Philly. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about this beer, so we're talking to Kevin, and they had a great beer selection, but I tell you what put it over the top was the fact that he was so knowledgeable about the beer. We were talking to him for a long time just about different beers and everything. And he knew his stuff, and you know he knows we like Heady Topper. We're chasing it down, whatever. So we were bragging that we had it last week. He's like, "Yeah, I get it all the time." I'm like,
yeah, right?
Damn it! I thought it was harder.
You got nothing on me.
But he actually recommended. He's like, "Well, if you like Heady Topper, this is very close." He actually said he said he almost may like this better than the Heady Topper. And I tell you what, it's pretty damn good. It's pretty close too.
And the one nice thing about it is you can go to a store and actually buy it.
Exactly. I bought six of these bad boys.
That's the Cape of Good Hope. Yeah, this is actually really good. I just had a sip of this, and you know, it's not exactly Heady Topper, but then again, what is? But this is legit. This is really good stuff.
Good stuff. Yeah,
worth checking out.
He didn't steer us wrong, and they had a Dogfish tasting today, and he was letting us like try other beers. It was pretty cool. He's like, "Yeah, I'll open a beer." He's like, "I don't care."
We had a couple different pumpkin beers and a couple of things. So it was
really cool guy.
Awesome dude. Very, very knowledgeable. He really knew his stuff.
He blew your socks off with his knowledge of beer.
I mean, just between High Nose and, you know, USA Wine Traders, Kevin, I mean, my mind was blown today with the amount of knowledge. It's like so much stuff came in. I'm trying to retain just a little bit of it.
But it's the perfect marriage of what we do here, skiing and beer and alcohol. It's
pretty much.
Kinda.
It was almost a blueprint for what we want our future lives to be, podcast, you know, post-podcast or, you know, post-pre-greatness, when the podcast is like the full-time job, career, life. That's what is going to be involved. Going out, talking with people who are involved in skiing and alcohol, making connections, having good times, and then, you know, passing the knowledge on to you guys, our lovely fans and listeners.
It was really good to connect with the local people. It was nice.
Oh, awesome. Great people, too.
So what do you got, Brian?
So, I am drinking a Liloki Kipolo, which is from the Avery Brewing Company.
Lilikoi?
Yeah, Lilikoi Kipolo, which is, again, this is out of from Avery, and they're out of, is it Boulder or is it Denver? They're definitely from Colorado. I'm looking at it right now. They are from Boulder, yes.
Boulder.
So this is a luscious, juicy tart, and like no other, adding a tropical island flair to a spicy, traditional Witbier. It erupts with monumental passion fruit aroma and acidity, along with a sublimely succulent finish.
Sublime.
It's one of those beers, like, it's hard to describe. Yeah, it's a Belgian-style white, but it's got these funky, like, flavors to it, like fruity but tart and tropical. I mean, it's really tasty stuff. This would be great at the beach, you know, or hanging out at the pool.
It's got like a fruit beer taste, almost like the Festina Pesh. That's the only thing I've had before this that was very similar. But it has definitely a different flavor. It's like all different flavors.
As it warms up, it tastes more like the Festina Pesh, yeah.
But it's like it's tart, which is pretty interesting. Almost like a mild sweet tart, right?
Yeah, it's really good. He recommended this, saying that, you know, I guess he was saying because he's big into beer trading. He's like, oh, yeah, if you're into trading, you can get a, you know, you can get Heady Topper for this. You can get
Sip of Sunshine for this. He said basically you get anything with that.
Yeah, this is like a wild card.
The best part is he said he had two cases of it, and he's basically, they don't distribute that much. So he's like, yeah, pretty much I got the entire shipment in the area.
Yeah.
Which was pretty interesting. He's got a lot of connections and knows a lot of things about people around. He's had some breweries that they are trying to limit where they distribute to, and they're kind of being jerks about like distributing to him. And it's kind of sad to see that, but you know, I guess you know, every brewery has their own preference. I just don't know why they wouldn't want to get their beer out to everywhere. You know what I mean?
I guess it's similar, like we've talked about with, you know, regarding to skis and brands and equipment, that if you have a town with, you know, 15 ski shops, only one can have Arc'teryx or Mammut or
was this, you know, Highlander? Only
Castle.
One?
Yeah, that's how it is sometimes. You know, you keep the demand high by having your supply low.
Yeah.
So that's just
two opposite ends of like a very big town. So it's kind of like, yeah, it's stretching it.
I think it's a turf battle.
Yeah, it is a turf battle.
It's turf battle. It's like the Warriors.
It's politics behind there.
Your little piece of turf.
Little piece of turf.
And yeah, so our original plan was, because, you know, today we're, you know, doing this on Friday the 18th. This is the beginning of Vermont Beer Week. And our original plan was to be drinking Vermont beers. And we had some Long Trail. But unfortunately, Kevin had talked us into these other beers. So, yeah. But we wanted to let you guys know Vermont Beer Week is going on right now. It's actually 10 days. And Vermont is presently home to over 40 breweries. The Vermont beer scene has been at the forefront of the craft beer boom over the last few years, with the likes of Alchemist and their Heady Topper ranked the number one beer in the world from beeradvocate.com, which we had last week.
Wow.
And Hill Farmstead Brewery ranked the number one brewery in the world from ratebeer.com in 2013 and 2015. With the most breweries per capita in the entire nation, 2015 is the year that Vermont joins the ranks of 70-plus other states and cities by offering a dedicated beer week.
Wow.
So there's all kinds of cool events going on, different venues they're having things at. So check out vermontbeerweek.com to get more information.
So what are your favorite Vermont beers? Because I had before this, I did have the pumpkin Long Trail, which was really good. I just drank it too fast, so then I went over to the yards because it was cold by then.
Ah, yes. Well, obviously, Heady Topper is absolutely dynamite. I love that Lawson's Finest Sip of Sunshine. That's so good.
Nice.
And, you know, if you're talking the quote-unquote bigger breweries in Vermont, Long Trail, Limbo IPA, and the Sick Day IPA.
Nice. I think something that's been akin to my heart, I always liked Harpoon. I went to the brewery up there.
Mm-hmm.
Harpoon and Magic Hat. Like Magic Hat.
Yeah.
The number nine, I'm glad it's around. I thought it was a dying breed, and now they brought it back.
No, that's a solid beer to have around, and you can get it in most places too. So
yeah, now it's like big, you know, big distribution. But
there's tons of good stuff in Vermont. Switchback is awesome too.
Switchback.
Fiddlehead makes good stuff. Yeah. Rock Art. There's
Fiddlehead Single Chair is a local.
Single Chair, yeah.
That was pretty good. Oh, what's the other one? The Shed.
Oh, Shed. Shed's dynamite up at Stowe.
You and Rem are all over the Shed this year.
Yeah, the Shed IPA is really good.
Yeah.
So yeah, tons of good Vermont beer, so check that out.
Cool. So next we got some follow-ups. So a follow-up from last week. Last week we did ski. You know, we talked about skis. All the new skis came out. A lot of cool stuff.
You know what I just thought about? High Nose has no snowboards.
No, they did. They had a few in there.
They did?
Yeah.
All right.
He said there's one guy that does the boards, but they have a ton of skis because they do a lot of stuff for racers.
Right.
Ski racing. But I tell you what, we got a clinic today, and Derek and High Nose, man, took us around. He told us everything in like an hour and a half between all the stuff he told us about boots and skis. I was like, holy crap, my mind is going to like just blow up because he gave us so much information. But it was so cool because now I have like he broke down all the skis and like the difference in the skis from last year to this year and which brands were like, you know, changing some of the you know, the way they build their skis and stuff like that. It was pretty neat.
We even said after, too, we wish we kind of talked to him before we did last week's podcast regarding the gear, because, I mean, he kind of told us all the different kind of core materials they use and how a lot of these, the big trend now is putting the carbon fiber in the tip. But that makes it a two-piece ski, and that usually increases the amount of chatter you have. So he was
he was right on. He knew his stuff. I mean, obviously, he's been around so long racing and working with racers and just all types of skiers and boarders, and he knows his stuff.
He loves it, too. You can tell.
Yeah.
Because he's really passionate about it. He knows his stuff. So
but
it was great.
So one of the follow-ups was, you know, after we did skis last week, I was like, you know, we really didn't cover snowboards. And Brian and I aren't snowboarders. Steve, who we had on the podcast a long time ago, was our snowboarder.
I'll come back on the podcast anytime you guys want to have me.
That's the token, Steve. And,
thanks, Steve. We'll get you on next time.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. But, you know, he was our representative.
Third place, Grand Fondo. Yeah. Respect.
Yeah. He was our representative snowboarder. But I figured, you know what? I saw, I was looking at, you know, just snowboard reviews. There's a ton of sites out there. And they have one site that I saw that I love their boards because I always like the wood tops, arborcollective.com. They have some really amazing looking snowboards with a lot of, like, you know, wood grain finish on the top. It was beautiful boards. So I thought
they
that
do
was
make
cool.
Some really nice ones.
Yeah. So I just saw that, and they were highly rated in some of the sites I saw. So I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, their designs are all over the place. There's one look like 80s metal. And you have ones that have like the wood top, and then ones that look almost like a like an Elks Club, the deer logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, good really stuff. Cool stuff there.
And another follow-up from last week, the Grand Fondo.
Your race.
I race.
How'd you do?
Number one for King of the Mountain for the 42-mile that we went.
Is that a team?
As a team.
Team? Okay, nice.
Steve.
Congratulations.
Steve, our buddy, number three. And me, number five, out of about 350 people. So
very nice.
Pretty impressive.
Congratulations.
For an old bastard like me, it's pretty good to... I whooped some kids, man. They were like 17-year-olds. I whooped them.
You done good.
Whooped.
Nice.
Crushed.
Anyway, very nice.
So what else we got, man?
A couple other little follow-ups. So we keep following up on Burning Man because there keeps coming up with, you know, there's new stuff. There's new information that we keep finding. So... last week, we talked about one of the DJ sets from Burning Man. It was the Lee Burridge set on BBC Radio 1. Tycho, who is Scott Hansen, another musician, he put out his Burning Man Sunrise set from Thursday, September 3rd. And it is 2 hours of just beautiful, chill music. So we'll post this on the show notes as well.
It's pretty cool. We listened to this before from SoundCloud. SoundCloud.
It's on SoundCloud. Yeah, it puts you in a super like chill, cool state of mind. So it's a great mix, definitely worth checking out. And then another Burning Man story. So I found this today, and this is kind of crazy.
It's pretty funny.
So this couple, they were driving up to Burning Man. They were from San Francisco. And on their way to the festival, they received an email from one of their friends thanking them for renting their apartment on Airbnb. The problem was they hadn't actually put their apartment on Airbnb. They had hired a professional house sitter that they found on trustedhousesitters.com.
Wow.
Who took the apartment and listed it on Airbnb himself.
Genius.
To get the $2,000 for 5 days.
Regifting.
Brilliant.
So they got paid for whatever they were house sitting plus the extra $2,000 bonus.
Exactly. Double dipping.
Double dipping.
Yeah.
They're watching the house. They're going to clean up after.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
But yeah, that was our follow-up Burning Man stories.
They're just trying to pay it forward to someone else. I don't know.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah. So now we got some ski news for you. So we're going to start off with some bad news. Nevada snowpack is much worse than originally thought. 500-year low. Researchers
That's
are now
inconceivable.
Saying... inconceivable. It's bad. Researchers are now saying that this year's record low snowpack may be far more historic and ominous... more ominous than previously realized. In a paper published Monday in the journal Nature Climate Change, scientists estimate that the amount of snow in the Sierra Nevada was the lowest in more than 500 years.
See, they could have been off by a decimal point, too. And it could be like, you know, lowest in, you know, 0.5 years. I don't know. It could be.
Yeah, the report is the latest in a series of studies that have sought to characterize the depth of California's 4-year drought and place it in a broader historic context. It joins a growing body of research warning that global warming will reduce the amount of snow blanketing California mountains. a development that will reduce the state's available water even as its population continues to grow.
I guess that water thing is nasty. I saw something on the news the other day. I was like, wow, it's like at such a low. It's horrible.
Yeah, it's really scary. And, you know, again, there's nothing you can really do. You just have to pretty much just wait for the snow to fall.
They're almost at the point where they're going to just saw it off and let it float out to sea so they have more water around it. And maybe it'll get...
And then it can like kind of block that Fukushima toxic sludge from the rest of the continental U.S.
Well, they cut off another piece and they'll float that out.
Just put it out there. Make a shield.
Make a shield.
Yeah, you could do that.
So you have that story. With the next story, now, I don't know. I think somebody's making up some stuff. I don't know. Just doesn't sound right. So what do we got next?
Now we got a happy story. So today, September 18th, it snowed 16 inches in Big Sky, Montana.
Boom, fresh pow.
Damn! Can you believe that? Ready? They said Big Sky is still open for summer activities through September 27th, but the summit of Lone Peak, sitting at 11,166 feet, got a serious dose of winter on September 18th. Located just south of Bozeman, Montana, the resort is reporting over 16 inches of fresh snow at the top of Lone Peak and 12 inches of snow in the bowl at Mid-Mountain.
Bam!
That is dynamite news.
So the ski club went there, was it 2 years ago, and they had nothing, right?
Two or three, yeah.
And they had, like, they didn't have a lot of snow.
No.
And now, like, September, boom.
Yeah, they average about 400-plus inches a year. So this
That's
is,
what she said.
This is getting a, really? Really? We're going there?
I can't stop myself.
You can.
I cannot stop.
I assure you.
It's like Michael Scott Tourette's.
No. No.
That's what she said.
You're better than that.
No, I'm not. No, I'm
yes,
not.
Yes, you are. You're better than that. You're highfalutin. You're better than this. So they're already getting snow there. A couple other places reported a little bit of snow. You know, Jackson, a lot of places out in the the Tetons, and I think even maybe bits of Colorado may have got a little bit of snow as well. So
winter is coming.
Very promising sign. It's you see these pictures and you just start getting like excited.
You guys got to slow back a little. Wait. Let it build up. It's going to be another few months.
Slow your roll, yeah.
This is where, like, you get motivated to start working out, which maybe we'll talk about next week, to get ready for the snow.
Yeah,
because it's coming. It's coming. It's on the horizon. We got to, you know. The next story, we were talking about Indoor Snow Center.
Yeah.
In Meadowlands.
In Meadowlands in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
So
5 miles west of New York City.
Yeah. And we were talking, so now, where is a new one? It's going to be 500 meters long, 100 meters wide, and 36,000 square meters of snow surfaces.
Will it be in Dubai?
No.
Will it be in Bombay?
No. I'll save you the trouble of trying to guess again. It's going to be in Norway.
Norway?
Boom.
Because they need indoor cold there in Norway, right?
Exactly.
Do they have enough cold?
It's not cold enough. Well, there's a few months it's not cold. So for those few months...
I think you mean a few hours where it's not cold.
I'd like that here. Like, you know, if I could have that here, I'd be happy. So Loringsburg Winter Park will be a 6-story hotel and leisure complex just outside of Oslo, which is pretty good. Hey, all I'm saying is X Games going there. Now they're
going to be
indoor
X Games?
Maybe at least training.
Underground X Games.
24/7 X Games.
It's like Super Mario Brothers, underground level X Games.
They should have 24/7 X Games. Just like... events for like 24-hour period. So if you're doing like, you know, half pipe, it's 24 hours. Like every like hour, you got like a heat.
Like 24 hours of Le Mans?
Yeah, exactly.
Or like a decathlon is 10 events. What's 24 events?
24 events, one each hour.
That's what I'm saying. Like a do.
Yes.
Like a do Furlan. Some sort of new name for like the amount of events. There's 24 events, per hour.
Tour de Francia X Games.
Tour de Francia X Games. Extreme Underground Tour de Francia X Games.
Yeah.
That's got potential. I like it.
It's got potential. So indoor cross-country ski track that can take up to 1,000 people at a time. So if 1,000 Norwegians want to go night or indoor cross-country skiing, they can do that. That's pretty wild. And we were talking to Derek today, and one of the things he said, he's been to one of those indoor parks, and he said you could actually... choose how you want to blow the snow.
Yeah, the conditions,
powder,
right?
Or if you want like heavy, like you can. It's amazing, like the technology that's out there today. So
Jersey powder, a little bit of ice.
Jersey pow,
right? But that was amazing to hear him talk about that. How you can actually change the conditions.
I had no idea.
I guess they probably must adjust the humidity and
I thought you'd just be lucky to get snow in there.
I thought it was like artificial snow.
So you mean it'll be better snow in Jersey than we have on the slopes in Jersey?
Take that.
In your face.
I like that.
In your face, ice.
Hey, it's what we got to do, you know? We gotta find a way to evolve and you know, play the hand we're given.
Ski the east, baby.
Ski the east.
All right, what else we got?
All right.
Speaking of tech,
Whistler Blackcomb takes advantage of new pass technology.
Finally. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, finally.
We were talking about this earlier in the year. Like, how many? This has been out for a long time.
Yeah, they've got the RFID, the radio frequency identification passes. They rolled out last year, but this year they have a new app called WB Plus, where you can actually get your statistics of your days riding on the mountain. So you set up a profile, and you can access the data that's being logged every time you hop on the lift with that RFID pass. So you can get your total vertical, and you can share that. So it's a nice little extra feature. I mean, there's a lot of apps out there that do similar things. You know, like Ski Trax is one of them that we've used, which is great, which will store your information. But this one's like, you know, Whistler Blackcomb specific, and it's automatic.
This is similar to what we had in Switzerland, in Zermatt.
Yes.
Because there was an app that was connected to the mountain.
3.5 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, I mean, technology's been around. And that was, it took your swipe from the mountain and then charted it on an app.
Mm-hmm. You can get it online. So that's kind of cool. So if you're heading out to Whistler, take a look at that. Let us know how it works. If you liked it, if you didn't, skibumpodcast.com.
Now, can you take a selfie with a snake on the slope and post it?
Imagine if there was like snow snakes.
Snow cat. You could take a...
No, snow snakes. Like crazy asshole camouflage snow snakes. Wow. So you're like skiing and all of a sudden like maybe you fell, you know, you nice big jump, you wiped out.
Oh yeah.
Freaking snow snake just grabs you and just boa constrictor chokes you out like
anaconda in the snow.
Just pulls you out.
Snowaconda. They had shark phalange. We could have snowaconda.
Do they have shark phalange?
I think shark phalange was an actual...
Ooh.
I wouldn't call it a full feature film. It might have been straight to video.
Yeah.
But it may have been... I did see a trailer for Shark Valanche.
Shark Valanche, yeah.
But Snowconda, I like.
That makes me extremely uncomfortable, the thought or possibility of that even happening.
Snowconda, I think that could happen.
Ugh, terrifying.
Snowconda, you're out there, you're in the half pipe, and all of a sudden, bam, you got a goddamn anaconda get you a snow
Ice Cube going to be there to help us?
Ah, that's right. If he's there, Ice Tea or Ice Cube, anything with an ice in it.
No tea, only Cube.
Only Cube.
Only Cube can help us.
Only Cube could help, but if they're there, they can help you. Yeah.
That's true.
Just saying. Just saying. All right, so Pitzau adds solar power farm. So Austria has the Pitzau Glacier, and it's a glacier ski area, and it's the country's highest ski area, and it has a solar farm now 3,000 meters up, which will begin operation in a few weeks. So it's going to generate approximately, what do you say,
1.21 gigawatts.
1.5 kilowatt hours of potential of energy.
1.45 million.
Yeah.
Kilowatt hours.
So it's going to actually supply about, they say, 380 to 420 households per year of energy. So that's going to be, they have... You know, the construction, this whole thing, and it's going to help the whole area get powered, which we were talking about different alternative energy power sources for different ski areas. I know Vermont has a bunch of them we talked about, but...
Yeah, like the cow-powered ones they have.
Cow-pow?
With the cow poop.
Cow poop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine this is going to be what ski areas are looking for. I mean, you got to keep the area pristine, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, some of the ski areas, they don't allow any gas automobiles, right? So electric. So they're all trying to preserve... their areas, which...
Yeah, I mean, having a clean environment is super important to having, you know, to maintaining that feel that you need that clean environment. Otherwise, you're not going to have snow. And, you know, it's very nature-specific and nature-focused. And, you know, it's so...
How about, like, a very little nuclear reactor on the mountain? You think that would work?
That probably wouldn't work so great.
I mean,
I don't think.
If it doesn't leak, it wouldn't be... non-green, right?
If it doesn't leak. And that's the big problem.
Just saying.
But yeah, I mean, the solar solution seems great on a glacier because you have, you know, you're that much closer to the sun and there's less atmosphere between you and the sun. So
Yeah.
It's probably getting some pretty, probably some of the strongest rays that you can get anywhere in the world.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. And hopefully they that catches on.
Yeah.
And they're able to do that more often or in more places. That would be great to see. So that about wraps up ski news. So now we're getting into our topic. So we're calling it Just Bring It. And we're just kind of getting you guys, ready. Get yourself your checklist together. Figure out what you're going to need. So, because, again, look what happened today in Big Sky. They got 16 inches of snow. If that happens in November, first week of November, that means they're going to have a solid base and you can get out there and lay some tracks. So make sure you have all your gear. You're ready to go. We got a nice little checklist for you.
So we have a checklist, and there's snow.com had a bunch of gear checklists. Now, these are meant for when you're, when you're going on and traveling for a ski vacation, or you want to make sure you have your stuff just for the weekend or for the day. But I think, it's good to go through the checklist now and look at your stuff and see, what do I need to replace, or what do I need to get, or what do I want to get? Because right now, all the ski sales are going on. The ski swaps are coming up, and it's good to know what you want going into that so you can focus on getting that stuff.
Yeah, and also do like a thorough check of all of your gear. You never know if maybe you got something like a big gash in your ski. You may have something broken on your boot. You may have a tear in your jacket. Now is the time. Go over that stuff with like a fine-tooth comb. Check out what you need. Get what you need now so that when that snow does fall, you can just throw your stuff in your car and get out there.
Yeah. So, when you talk about gear, you go through the normal, the skis, boots, poles. If you're boarding, the board and the boots. Maybe bags, ski bags, helmets, goggles.
Yeah, goggles are a big one too, because a lot of times either, you can have, if you have an anti-fog lens, it could get messed up. You can get things cracked or scratched. Now is the time to check that stuff out and make sure you have what you need when it's time, when the snow falls, and you want to get on the mountain as soon as possible.
Well, this year already, I remember from last year, they started throwing a bunch of ski sales. I think I went to backcountry. They're throwing 50% off or something like that. I got a nice Oakley, another lens, because my lens, I screwed up the anti-fog on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered from last year when I started looking through the sales, like, oh, yeah, that's right. I screwed up my lens. And if I didn't think about it then, I would have gotten into the ski season, gone out for my first time, been like, crap, I didn't realize I screwed up my lens. And now I'd probably have to ski at least a few weeks before replacing my lens because, I wait for everything.
Or you would have gone to the shop, that first day you would have skied, and went to the shop, the brand new model is out, they're charging you full price.
Just buy this, it comes with the extra lens.
$230 bucks, you're down,
You're losing money if you buy just the lens,
Yeah.
Yeah, ridiculous.
So, yeah, you can do it now, Now is the time. You have the time, you have the patience.
Yeah.
Check the stuff out.
Certain things like hydration pack, right? So I remember 2 years ago, I wanted to get a new hydration pack, and I was like, in the summer, I was going to go hiking, and I was like, let me fill up my hydration pack. I'll take that with me. And oddly enough, I filled it up, and there was a big leak in it.
Oh, yeah.
Had I not known, I probably would have taken that up at least for one day and just leaked all over myself on the mountain. So it's kind of good, check that stuff out. Like, maybe fill it up, check out, the pouches or anything you need. Because a lot of those, sometimes you don't need a whole new hydration pack. You just need a component, a new hose or a new, new bag or something like that. So just check that stuff out.
Yeah, it's good too. It's also, with those hydration packs, the summer is a great time to wash them out. You can use, I think, what do you use? Is it like Effordent or
denture solution?
Yeah, denture solution. You put that in, it foams the water. You can, rinse it through, clean it out. Get that stuff cleaned up now, again, so you're not getting all freaked out and worrying about it beforehand. And you never know, too, if you didn't leave it out to dry well enough last time, there could be mold, there could be other stuff. And again, replace that stuff. It's not worth trying to clean that out.
You don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. You want to grab and go.
Grab and go, baby.
Well, a lot of stuff, too, is I do it for my biking stuff, and I do it for my gym stuff. And I do it for my ski stuff, is I have everything that I'm going to bring on the mountain already packed in a bag. So, I'll take my boots, my helmet, my gloves, all my essential stuff that I know I need, and I chuck that in a bag, and that's how I store it in the winter. That's how I store it in the summer, and then the winter, I pull it out, make sure everything's there, put it all back together, and all winter, it's all together, so that I know I just grab that bag and I go. It's like my go bag,
Yeah.
So it's great. It's so easy. I know, just bring my clothes and I have all my other crap in that bag and I just, boom, I'm out.
Yeah, that's the time to do that. And then also, too, if one thing I was looking at just before, you know, if you, you know, with your jackets and your pants and stuff, if you want to tech wash it, you know, so you can get that, the waterproofing back in there,
yeah,
do that stuff now. Get it all ready so that, again, when you, when the time comes and the snow's on the ground, you throw it in your car and go. You're all set, ready to go.
Yeah.
And also, too, with, you know, technology, everyone's, you know, rocking either walkie-talkies or GoPros or something. Make sure you have, you know, your battery, your memory cards cleared off. You have your batteries charged. Make sure the batteries still work. Make sure the GoPro's all good to go. Check all that stuff out now.
Well, now that, I think it's good. Good time to build a list of stuff that you need. Because you got Christmas coming up, you have the end of the season, like you have holidays coming up, and there's between sales and like gifts that come around this time of year. Like it's easy to say, you know, people are like, well, what do you want for, you know, the holidays? Hey, I know exactly. Here's a list of like all the ski stuff I need or want. You know what I mean? It's just easy to have that ready.
Oh yeah, and you know what? Create an Amazon wish list too.
Yeah,
we have one. All we have on there right now is the Westerly sweater from The Big Lebowski. Two of them, size medium.
Think, boom.
You know, granted, it's $238, and if you want to guess two of them, you know, you're down almost $500. But, you know, it's your way of giving back to the podcast. So.
Chipping with a few people, maybe, you know.
Seriously, you know, help us out. We love you. You can love us back, too.
I like also looking, like, so I have like, my jacket, and I actually plan what I'm going to put in the jacket, because I have so many pockets, and I have, like, things that work, things that don't work. And it's kind of nice to, like, plan that out. GoPro is a big one. You know, like, if you don't have a GoPro and you're getting one for the first time this summer, play around with it. I mean, because when you go out to ski, you don't want to be messing around with it in the cold.
Oh, it's the last thing you want to deal with, you know? And there's so many settings on there. Like, there's so many things you can tweak and alter. If you do it now and figure that out, you'll be in a, you know, much better place once the mountain hits. And two, you know, we kind of mentioned, you know, you really talk about getting your phone ready, but all those apps that we talked about a few weeks ago, you can get your apps on there.
Look at them. Play around with them, man.
Make sure you know how to work them and get the most out of them.
Yeah.
The GoPro app. There's the GoPro app you can have on your phone that you can preview what your GoPro sees. Make sure, because you have to sync it up first. There's like a code you have to put in to attach. I think it's like a Bluetooth code to attach the GoPro to your phone. So, again, do that now.
Yeah.
You will not regret it. You will be so much happier. You won't get pissed off and chuck the GoPro into the woods, which I've seen people do.
Well, like you said about that, the most stressful thing is like, oh, I just want to take my GoPro. And you think, oh, I got it. Great. You take it out of the box. And then you realize like, oh, shit, I didn't charge it. Because I've done that before. And you get to the mountain, you're like, all right, I brought a GoPro and I can't use it because I didn't charge it because I'm an idiot.
That's the worst. Yeah. Or your memory card's full.
Memory card's full. Or you don't have a memory card that's going to hold enough video that you want. Like, go get a new memory card.
Get
like,
the biggest one you can.
Yeah.
Don't, not even, whatever the biggest one they sell is, get that one, because...
Well, whatever biggest one the camera takes, that's the other thing.
Like, I think they all max out at 64 gigabytes.
Yeah, if you have an older one, some of them they max out at 32.
That's ridiculous.
Just saying. Yeah. Just check, you know?
Check now.
But yeah, it's like, you don't want to futz around with that later, because you'll get just pissed off and you won't want to use it. I mean, I've been there.
Yeah, and there's like little things that, you know, you make sure you want to have like a portable or a packable screwdriver. Even like a little Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
Sunglasses, hats, chapstick, sunscreen, hand warmers. And then, you know, obviously the stuff you're going to need for like après too. You know, boots, gloves, like extra gloves too. Not just the ones you're going to ski with, an extra pair that you want to have going out. Maybe an extra jacket. And then all of your, you know, your base layer, your fleeces.
Well, and this time of year too, you're going to know like if you're going to plan to do a big trip. Or are you just going to do weekend trips or day trips? So if you do a big trip and you can take your skis, I don't know about you, but I don't have a bag. I don't have a travel bag for my skis. Not yet. I had one. I got rid of it. And now I don't. So if I did want to travel with my skis, I'd have to go out and get a bag. So now's the time to look.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I have a giant travel bag with wheels and everything, but it's so cumbersome and I don't really like using it. It pretty much sticks in my, like stays in my storage unit.
Yeah.
Empty. All the time because it doesn't fit
Might
in the
car.
I want
to sell it on eBay now.
But it's kind of cool and I want to use it. It's just I don't really, I just never have used it. It's one of those things like if I did sell it, I know I would need one like
that next year.
And I got it cheap too. I mean, it was like half price. It's this big, cool Oakley. It holds two pairs of skis and two pairs of boots.
Wow.
Again, it's really nice, but I don't really, again, for what I'm doing, I'm not really using it. Because again, like we talked about last week, we kind of like renting our skis when we go traveling. you know, try new skis out. It's almost like a demo week or a demo weekend. But I'm sure one day at some point I'll need to travel with them. But no, I have the bag already. So, you know, it's good to go.
Yeah. And then you get into clothes. So clothes, I mean, I have hats and skull caps. We could start with those. They're kind of equipment, but they're also kind of clothes. I have some for fashion and some for just, like, use. You know what I mean? Like, you wear the skull cap. The balaclava, like, my balaclava last season, I remember saying, you know, I probably got to get a new one because it's getting a little frayed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't look at it. And if I didn't actually think about it, coming up with the list and looking at it now, I would never think, like, hey, you know what? I was thinking about getting a new one in the last season. And I said, oh, I'll get one at the beginning of next season. Now's the time to get it.
Yeah, I bought one beginning of last season. And it was from Spacecraft. And I absolutely loved it. It had a little mouth hole in there. And it had a little hinge so you could pull it down underneath your chin if you didn't want to have it on. But I have no idea where it is.
See?
I looked all over. A few weeks ago, we did a massive, like, pack away, you know, stuff for the winter and, you know, keep stuff out. And I was looking through all my ski stuff, and I could not find it. And it's driving me crazy. And I know I'm going to buy a new one, and then it's going to turn up. That's just the way things always work out. But, yeah, I love that one. And, again, different people like different, you know, styles and, you know, those balaclavas, they're cool, but they're the one that everyone kind of gets is that neoprene one with the nose. And the
I don't like that one.
I have it. I don't like it either at all.
Yeah.
I don't like the way it feels, the way it looks. Doesn't fit my nose right. So, yeah, you know, that's the kind of, this is the time now. You can take the time. You can figure out what you need, what you like, and you can make it happen. So get out there and get that stuff. Again, yeah, like you mentioned, like there's online, there's sales. Your local shop's going to have sales. Do it now while you can.
Yeah, you just got. I mean, the big thing is knowing what you're gonna get, and what you're not gonna get. I mean, my balaclava, I love. I want to get the same one that I have. And it's.
Which one do you have now?
I have. Oh, I'm trying to think. It is. It'll come to me. I'm trying to think. But gloves were the other thing I was looking at too. Like, there's a ton of gloves that I want to get. So I'm kind of. I bought like two pair of gloves last year, and they were kind of crap. So, I've been eyeballing some other gloves that I want to get. So that's another thing I'm looking at now. It's like, well, you know, what's on sale?
Yeah, do it now. Good sales are all over the place.
Snow pants, probably gonna get pants. I mean, that's the other thing. You got to look at, like, I lost a little bit of weight this, you know, summer.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I go back into ski season, I'm probably gonna have to get rid of one pair of pants because they're too big now. So it's like, all right, I got to get rid of those. Now, what's that do to my whole ski wardrobe?
Uh-oh.
You know what I mean? You got to start changing stuff up. But, yeah, and then just plan on what you're going to bring. I mean, you know, if you're going to bring lunch, if you're going to bring, you know, any kind of medicines, any kind of tools with you. I know with snowboard, sometimes you want some tools. You know, look for that stuff now. You might, you know, just do the plan, and you'll see what you want to get and stuff.
Yeah, and one thing that's not really, I mean, you can, I guess it's, you know, not really that, it's more of like a medical thing, technically, is like, I know I wear contact lenses when I ski. It's one of those things, make sure you have your prescription filled early and you have plenty of extra lenses. And what I always do is I keep an extra pair in my Camelback because I'm always worried that maybe you're having like an epic day and you have a massive crash, massive spill. What if you fall hard and your contact lens pops out?
Yeah, you're kind of screwed.
So make sure you get your prescription filled, get your contacts, have them, keep an extra pair with you while you're skiing just in case so you don't miss out on a great day.
Yeah. Oh, so my balaclava, it's Patagonia.
Oh, Patagonia. Okay,
but
nice.
I've tried, so the ski mat, like I've tried probably like, I don't know, literally probably about 8 different types of mats. The neoprene, the partial neoprene, the, you know, the knit one, like I've tried all different ones. The Patagonia one is the only one I like.
Really?
And I've had that for like, I gotta say, like 4 years now, and it's like it's starting to stretch out. I probably should get a new one, but I'm so afraid to get rid of it if I don't have a replacement because I'm like, I really like that one.
Yeah, I'm looking at spacecraftcollective.com right now, and they have their balaclava, the same one that I had last year that I lost, and
it's actually the same one. They took it and they're reselling it.
They took the one that I had and they're reselling. Exactly. It's got a nice little mesh mouth hole and it worked out perfectly. I loved it. So I'm going to try to pick one of these up. I don't even know if you can buy stuff on their website. It's so weird. They're like, here, this exists, but you can't buy it from us.
It would be nice if they sent you a replacement, right?
Yeah, spacecraft. What's up?
Say, what's up?
Speedbonepodcast.com.
What's the model number of that and the color you want?
Yeah, seriously, right? It's just called the balaclava. That's it.
So what's the most ridiculous thing you've brought? Like, so you have these checklists, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I go through all these checklists, and every once in a while, like, I get a little too excited for, like, a trip or something, and I bring all this extra shit I never need. So, yeah. Like, what is the most ridiculous thing you've brought?
The most ridiculous thing I've brought? Usually it's... I don't really bring anything. You said to bring too many contact lenses, again, just in case.
I brought a clothesline to hang clothes.
A clothesline.
Which, it seems a little ridiculous, but you wind up just hanging stuff on chairs. Like, you wash your ski stuff out.
Yeah, you make
out.
It work.
I brought duct tape. Duct tape one time.
Duct tape's always good.
Always good. You never run out of duct tape.
No, it's true.
You
can always find uses for it.
I'm trying to think what's really ridiculous and unneeded that I brought. Walkie-talkies after I knew I wasn't going to use them because everybody had cell phones. That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they are useful. Some people still use them.
Not if you're international, they're great because you don't want to get the international plan.
Not getting
That's a big one, too. Yeah, if you're going international and you don't want to get the... You don't have a SIM card you can take out for an international plan, get the walkie-talkies, make sure you're on the right frequency, and you can talk to your buddies that way.
Or just find a friend that'll loan them to you. Boom.
Even better.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
Gift that keeps giving.
So yeah, if you guys have any ideas, thoughts, things that we may have missed out on, please hit us up, let us know, skibumpodcast.com. You can connect to us that way, and we'll get it up there and update our the show notes page for this podcast. All right. You know what time it is?
It's time for Around the Horn.
It's time for Around the Horn.
Let's bring this around.
All right. So getting back into our alcohol wheelhouse here. First story is the Scratch and Sniff Guide to Be a Whiskey Know-It-All.
Hmm.
So if you remember the Scratch and Sniff books and stickers of your youth, you'll be happy to know that they still exist, but have matured just like you. The Scratch and Sniff Guide to Becoming a Whiskey Know-It-All is funny, informative, and will help you know where to start as you dive into the expanding world of whiskey. In just 20 pages, the book will help simplify whiskey for you, allowing you to learn some personal preferences just by following your nose. This is really cool. I just discovered this on Uncrate this week, and they were showing it. You go onto Amazon and pick it up. And yeah, it's pretty
much...
like
a sticker book of whiskey scents?
Yeah, so it's probably like leather and oak and cherry and
different. That'd be pretty funny if like you had kids going to school and like, yeah, I could identify like, Macallan versus Lavalin.
Versus Ardbeg. Glenfiddich. And yeah.
That'd be funny.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It's something it's worth checking out. We have to pick up this book just so we can give you guys a really, like a better review on what it's all about and how it works and if we like it or not.
We actually did some wine tasting before, and as we're sampling the wine and thinking about it, it's like, we've done wine tasting, we've done whiskey tasting, and it's great to like taste and like, sample stuff because that's how you really figure out what you like. And
it's the only way really is to try a bunch of different stuff. And a lot of times, whiskey can get expensive. So you don't want to buy like a $70 bottle of whiskey and be like, I don't really like this too much. So,
yeah.
These little tastings or these tools like the Scratch and Sniff Guide is a pretty good thing to get you to where you want to be. And
Kevin, you're going to let us taste what you like. Some beers?
He certainly did.
We were doing beer tasting. We did wine tasting and beer tasting.
Yes, it's been a very fun evening for us this week. So
good stuff. So the next one, S.A.B. Miller gets takeover approach from Anheuser-Busch InBev.
What?
That's like, I don't know if they would let that go in. So Anheuser-Busch launched an effort to take over S.A.B. Miller. So you're talking Anheuser-Busch / InBev. They were bought by InBev, which is already a huge thing. They're going to buy Miller, which would probably knock out about, I got to say, they'd probably have over a 50% footprint of all beer out there.
Yeah, the article, which was on the Wall Street Journal, was talking about it. And yeah, it's I guess they're trying to compete with all these like small craft breweries, at least in the U.S., that are just, they're blowing up. But I guess they don't have the distribution that something like a large, InBev or SAB Miller would have.
It's crazy. I mean, it's just a huge, gigantic conglomerate. And if you ever like want to try to start looking at beers and like, who makes the beers. Just look at the big ones. It's, what is it, Molson Coors, SAB Miller, InBev. You look at those three companies, and it's like you just see, like, wow, I thought that was a private brewer. I thought that was a different company. And they've all gotten eaten up over the years. And even some of the small, what you would think are small, you know, craft brews, some of them are actually owned by some of these companies. So it's interesting to see. It kind of opens your eyes to see, like, wow, there's really, like, three or four big companies that are controlling the entire market.
Yeah. If you look at it now with global beer sales, the top 10 brewers by volume, number one is AB InBev. Number two is SAB Miller. Number three is Heineken. Number four is Carlsberg. And number five is China Resources Enterprises. Molson Coors is seven.
That is crazy.
And it's one of those things, like, after InBev, I mean, it really drops off. You know, SAB Miller is less than half of what they put out. And then after you drop down a couple more, it cuts in half again. So those two are by far the biggest. I don't think that can possibly go through. Because if they combined, they would have over, what is that, 600 million hectoliters in volume.
That's crazy.
And the second one would be less than 200. Way less than 200, which is Heineken.
Wow. So if you look at Miller, like, I'm on Miller's site now, and so SAB Miller, they make a lot of brands that are, like, international brands that we don't even see here. And if I were to see some of these brands, I'm like, oh, that's like a foreign small brewery, but they're, like, they're owned by SAB Miller. So it's kind of like, it's very interesting. Just go to the site. I mean, of course, you got your big ones like Blue Moon, Coors. That's all SAB Miller. You have Foster's, which I would have never thought would be part of Miller. Hams, Grolsch. You know, these are ones that I would have always thought that were not part of them.
And I'm looking at their stats here. They're actually owned by Altria.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Philip Morris?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. Keystone, that's another big brand.
Keystone. There's a lot of shitty beers they own, huh?
Leinenkugel, it's part of them.
Oh, really?
That's, yeah. Mickey's, Miller, Milwaukee's Best.
Ooh.
What else? Old English. Oh-ee! Peroni, the Italian Peroni, which I do like. That's Miller.
Really?
That's what I'm saying. Just look at these sites. Go out and look at the big sites. I think it's Molson and was it Coors came together? And Miller, SAB Miller, and then just InBev. Just look at those three already, and you'll be like, wow. I didn't. Pilsner Urquell is Miller.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of them. You never know what your little beer that you drink that you love may be owned by this giant conglomerate.
Yeah,
that's just the way the world works, apparently. So,
and I'm sure you'll see one on there that you'll be like, "Wow, I thought that wasn't anything close to a Miller."
But you know who doesn't own them? Alchemist, Hetty Topper. They're their own independent little brewery, and they will not sell out to the man.
But then you have the little brewers that get really big. So you got like your
like a Dogfish Head.
Dogfish or Sierra Nevada.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Boston Brewing, which is
Sam Adams, yeah.
Sam Adams. I mean, they're huge now. So it's kind of like you can't really consider them people still put them in the craft brew classification, but they're pretty damn big.
Yeah. So that would be big news.
But I wonder if that
I don't know if it's going to go through. It seems like there's too much in there that'll prevent it from happening.
Look, one company making all the beer in the world, just about.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. That's terrible.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Moving from alcohol to something else?
Well, it's kind of got alcohol-related news as well. So Colorado, who, I don't know if you heard, they have legalized recreational marijuana there about 2 years ago. Colorado has raised more tax revenue from marijuana than from alcohol this year. It clocked in at $70 million last fiscal year alone. Pot is a boon for the tax revenue in Colorado, outpacing revenue from alcohol taxes in the fiscal year ending on June 30th. Colorado collected almost $70 million in marijuana taxes during that time, nearly double the $42 million collected from alcohol taxes.
Wow.
And then we reported it last week. They had a tax holiday, which was this past Wednesday, which they said people were just – it was like Black Friday for weed.
Weed?
It was like Green Wednesday. They were just lined up and they were just buying
– Weed Black Friday.
It was awesome. Weed Wednesday.
So
it was
Wednesday. So I used to work for Toys R Us, and I don't know if it was PC or whatever they wanted to equate it with money, but they used to call it Green Friday. So now you call it Green Wednesday, I think.
That's Green Wednesday, baby.
It's Green Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. You ain't buying toys. You're buying weed.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild, man.
Yeah, they're saying that on the States, they had the one-day tax holiday this past Wednesday, and shoppers saved about $20 an ounce on Wednesday, but distributors saved roughly $300 a pound, with one grower telling ABC he probably saved $45,000 before lunch.
Wow. I wonder.
Crazy.
So I'm just going to equate this to Black Friday. Do you think they had people like getting stampeded like in Walmart or Target or
I don't think so,
Toys
man.
R Us?
I think everyone was a little more chill.
I think they were just lined up like, hey, man, why you got to push, man?
There's plenty getting, for everybody, man. Plenty. There's not like there's like three TVs.
Until they say, we are running out of weed. And everyone's like, oh, man, I'm freaking out.
There's plenty of Louis the 13th for everybody.
That's right.
Just take your time, get in line,
everybody,
chill out.
Everybody get your diesel, you get your medical, you get your Kush, purple Kush.
They got it, man. Don't worry. So that's crazy. $70 million in tax revenue.
Wow.
Fantastic.
You got the next baby.
Yeah, this one was cool, too. I found this today. The Concorde may fly again by the end of the decade. So the Concorde, if anyone doesn't remember, is one of only two commercial supersonic jets ever created. So it may return to the skies if an ambitious and dedicated crew of enthusiasts is successful in bringing it back from the dead. So this group called Club Concorde, they're comprised of former pilots and frequent Concorde flyers and charterers that have kept the spirit of the plane alive over the years. And the group now thinks it has enough cash in the bank from private investment to open a tourist attraction in London and then restore a Concorde in, from air shows they were using and start private chartering it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And they have another plane that they want to make and get it flying again. And I think, what was it? Is it like New York to Paris in like 3 hours? I think the old Concorde used to do. Since it flew supersonic?
I thought it was close to four. But now okay. they're talking about like modern technology. You know, people would do like 2.5. Like just I've seen crazy stuff out there.
Yeah, like Airbus, which I guess used to be one of the companies that made the Concorde. It was duly constructed between Aeropatial, which was a French company, and British Aircraft Corporation. The Aerospatial, I'm sorry, I'm totally butchering that, I know. They became Airbus, I think.
Huh.
It was the successor to Aerospatial. And, they said it was just too expensive to maintain. There was a couple of crashes, so they stopped producing and maintaining it. It's crazy to me to think, though, with all the way, like, the way technology advances. Like, look at a car from 20 years ago compared to a car now. It seems so different, so much more advanced, so much safer, so much better, so much more efficient. You know, the Concorde started flying, I think, in like the 80s, maybe?
Yeah.
And to think in that 35 years, they haven't come up with something better.
So I'm looking at something now. So Airbus is working on something called the Aeron. So its own supersonic jet, and they're saying New York to L.A. in 2.5 hours.
That would be amazing.
They also said Lockheed Martin is working on one. Like, so a lot of people are working on, because the engines are just so much more advanced. They have ramjet technology. Like, it's a lot of different, like, technologies that they can employ. The materials, everything. So, I mean, New York to L.A., 2.5 hours. You know the problem with that? You're gonna move across the entire country in 2.5 hours, and you're still going to have to get to the airport 2 hours early.
Yeah, seriously, so, right. You
know, it's just crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few other ones. I guess Airbus also has applied for some patents for supersonic ultra-rapid jet capability, which they're saying is possible. It could be 4.5 times the speed of sound. Boom. And fast enough to get from Paris to San Francisco in about 3 hours. That's crazy fast.
Wow.
Because that puts you at New York to Paris in an hour and a half.
Now, if you drill a tunnel through the earth, Mm-hmm. Would you be able to get there just as quick on a train, nope. just going straight?
Not even close.
Just saying.
You need that Hyperloop.
Hyperloop.
If you don't have the Hyperloop, you got nothing.
Oh, you know what I saw on Netflix the other day? Angry Sky. You ever watch that?
No.
It is crazy. It's about, so you know how the Red Bull guy jumped. He did the highest free fall jump. Put him up in the balloon. I forgot. What's his name again?
Felix Baumgartner.
Felix Baumgartner. So this is the guy that tried it before Felix Baumgartner. Tried it in, I'm going to butcher all the dates and everything. I forgot, like the 70s or whatever, 60s. And he actually was really close, and he did it. He attempted it three times. The second time he attempted it, the oxygen thing wouldn't come out. And he was like, he was going to do the jump. And the third time he died. So,
yikes.
Spoiler alert, but it was a really cool documentary. So, Angry Sky is what it's called. So, but in that, they were talking about all the technology of, like, what they found out about, like, getting planes up there. And, like, so this is, like, you know, years in the making from the Concorde to now. There's been so much of a leap in technology.
It just feels like, as a consumer, that nothing is being done, you know, because you don't really... Yeah. If you're not actively seeking it out, it's not like, oh, hey, check it out. Here's this new plane that's, you know, this more technologically advanced. It's going to get you to where you're going, you know, 80% faster.
Yeah.
And again, I know that, you know, air travel is not an easy thing, especially to do it at that speed, carrying that many people and yeah. making it cost effective.
Well, the Concorde is never cost effective, but I think there's that market now that's coming of really rich people that can afford.
Yeah.
You know, the Concorde used to be, I mean, way back was like 10 grand for a ticket. I mean, you know.
That was probably in the, what, the 90s?
Yeah.
Early 90s?
Yeah, it was flying since, what, the 80s, 90s, right?
I think so, yeah.
And I think it finally, I mean, that last crash, I think, is what kind of put the damper on everything because it was a brutal, like it crashed into the side of a building. It was pretty bad. And I think it just got such bad PR. They were like, yeah, it, you know, between refurbishing and the PR. So...
It was such a cool-looking plane, too. It had such a presence to it, you know, that most commercial planes really seem kind of boring and, you know.
Your cousin Deborah flew on it one time.
Yeah.
Did you go to Paris?
That's really cool, yeah. Yeah, it was introduced in January of 1976, and it was retired in November of 2003, and its cruising speed was 1,320 miles an hour.
Wow.
That's almost twice the speed of sound. That is so cool.
Boom. I remember Deborah said when she was on it, she said it was like luxury like you couldn't believe.
Oh, I can imagine. And, you know, those other ones that we were talking about that they're working on, they are, I mean, these are ultra luxurious, super, you know, high tech. I mean, the one they were talking about, it didn't have frames on the windows because it created more resistance.
Wow.
So, yeah, there are some, you know, companies coming out with this, but it's pretty much for the ultra wealthy and, you know, something that's not going to trickle down to the common man for quite some time.
Problem is, those things are going to be so nice, you're not going to want to leave in 2.5 hours. You're like, I need 4 hours in
this.
Can
we keep going?
Can we fly around again?
Yeah.
Like, no, I'm not getting out.
Yeah, so look for that coming out in the next couple of years. That'll be pretty cool. So this is a story near and dear to Mario's heart.
I heard about this and I was just like, what the hell? So there's an Olympic runner, ex-Olympic runner, Susie Faver-Harmon. So she was she's gotten a buzz the last few week or two, because she just came out with a memoir called Fast Girl, A Life Spent Running for Madness. And it's a book about her life, how she was in the 1992, 1996, and 2000 Olympics. And she's 47 now, but she talks about how... She spent her life, you know, in world-class competition, and she also had, I guess it was like either a sex addiction or whatever, but she says after the 2000 Sydney Games, she had a threesome with an escort in Vegas, and then she had a light bulb moment saying, why not get paid for sex? So she went into the call girl business, was charging $600 per hour. And later on, she was diagnosed with bipolar. So it's got to be some crazy wild ride. It just came out, you know, this book. But it seems like, you know, you're going to hear more about her, I'm sure, on some of the talk shows. They said 2020 did something on her. She's been on a lot of talk shows and stuff. So it's got to be pretty interesting. But I would have never – I took a step back. I was like, what? Olympic athlete? And I was like, oh, cool. Let's see what – what the – what the hell is going on?
Yeah, that's kind of a crazy story.
Oof.
Yeah, the whole bipolar thing is a little disturbing. And, you know, I'm sure if you have any, you know, any people close in your life that suffer from depression or bipolar or have any other problems like that, it may hit you a little too close to home. And it's funny, looking at the reviews on like Amazon and stuff, they're like, oh my God, it's riveting, it's crazy. They're like, yeah, but it's a little bit attention whore-ish also. You know, it's an interesting story. It'll maybe cool, maybe worth checking out. You know, it could be like, you know, good beach reading or driving up to ski trip reading or listening.
It's scandalous.
Scandalous.
Then the last thing we got is if you ate Chipotle in Minnesota.
Another one near and dear to your heart.
If you ate Chipotle in Minnesota. Now I eat Chipotle a lot. So Minnesota had a big scare. They had a salmonella outbreak at Chipotle. They believe they're attached to Chipotle. Said about 45 people were sickened by a salmonella outbreak. And they're saying it's possible the source of it was from Chipotle with the cucumbers.
See, I've been in Chipotle many, many times, and I've never seen a cucumber there.
I've never eaten a cucumber from there. So that's why I wouldn't get sick. See, that's my thing.
So you're good to go.
Yeah. If it's not meat and cheese, why would you put it on a burrito?
Seriously. Or avocado. Put the guac on there.
I'm not a big guac on my burrito. I like it separate.
What do you know then?
I like it separate with the chips, like a gentleman.
Like a gentleman. So that's pretty much everything we got this week, huh? We had a lot of good stuff. And like I said, you know, thank you to Derek again at High Nose and Greg for spending some time with us. We had a great time and learned a ton, and we'll have tons of other good information from them. And also a big shout out to Kevin up at the USA Wine Traders Club. He gave us some great advice and some great tips, and both of his recommendations so far have been awesome.
Spot on.
And we picked up a few other things that we may be sampling on future podcasts that we may report on as well. So yeah, if you want to go to the website, please check us out, skibumpodcast.com. Check us out also, you know, Twitter, @ Ski Bum Podcast, Facebook, / Ski Bum Podcast, or send us an email, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. If you can go into iTunes and rate us, we'd really appreciate it. And any tips, advice, anything we missed, or anything you want to share, please hit us up. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you guys again next week.
Thanks. Stay high, stay polluting.
Peace.